Welcome to the Music Career Show, telling you the stories of the world's best professional musicians.
Hello there and welcome to the Music Career Show. My name is Barry and every week I'll be speaking with incredible musicians from all over the world about how they've honed their craft and made a career out of doing what they love the most. If you're a new listener, then while you still have your device in your hand, please take a second to subscribe and tell your friends all about the Music Career Show. Hello there and welcome back to the Music Career Show. Today's guest is an award-winning singer-songwriter all the way from Los Angeles, which is in California, over in the States there, lads. And as I was reading her bio, I found out that if you search for her on Google Maps, you'll find photos of her, like murals, in the spots that she used to busk at, which I think is one of the coolest things and one of the most interesting facts about anybody I've ever heard of. So I'm really looking forward to speaking about this. This is Katie Ferrara. Good morning. Hello, Katie.
Hello, Barry. How are you?
I'm smashing now. How are you?
I'm good.
Katie, thanks very much for joining me today. So for the people out there who maybe don't know you yet and are just getting introduced to you for the first time, why don't you say hello to them and introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Katie Ferrara. I am a singer-songwriter from Los Angeles, California, and I'm so happy to be here. I look forward to chatting about my music.
Lovely. I look forward to chatting about your music as well. And I hope everybody is looking forward to listening to us chat about your music. So that's before we get into all of that good stuff, Katie, where did music all start for you? How did you get into music to begin with?
Well, my mom, she's a big influence on my life. When I was growing up, she had guitars all over the house. She's actually from the UK. So she came over to America, not to play music, but she used to be in a band when she was like in her 20s. And so she brought all of that over. And when I was growing up, I just gained an interest because I'd see her playing, you know, in her bedroom or performing out. And so I picked up the instrument as well. And then I joined my high school choir because I wanted to learn how to sing. I just really enjoyed it. A lot of my interest in music has just come from me trying it out and enjoying the process. But I also feel that I'm drawn to music as a singer because this is part of my purpose. I think I'm supposed to learn how to use my voice to inspire people and to help people come out of their shells. I remember being really shy as a kid, and everybody tells me this. I remember my choir teacher would even tell me the story. She'd say, you know, when you would talk, we didn't know that much about you, but when you would sing, it's like a whole new personality comes out. And I remember I was so thankful to my choir teacher because she gave me a solo in one of the songs we were singing. This was my junior year of high school. It was Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Great.
Usually when you sing a solo, you get like a couple lines where the choir's in the background and then, you know, you're singing on your own. And I just remember that moment. I was on stage and everyone in the audience was just so shocked and they were clapping for me. And people came up to me afterwards and they said, we didn't know you could sing like that.
Yeah.
And that really pushed me to like come out of my shell even more because I got to express a part of myself that I never really showed to anybody. And so I kept singing after that. I was, you know, outside of choir, I started learning songs off of YouTube. I started jamming with people when I got to college. You know, I brought my mom's guitar with me. She had this Yamaha guitar. Yeah. And, you know, between my classes, I was studying psychology at the time.
All right.
And between my classes, I would, you know, go online and I would learn songs. And I would go to, we had this place called the Mounds at Pitzer College. That's where I went to school. I would bring my guitar out to the Mounds, this big grassy area.
Yeah.
And I would just start singing songs and people would come over and they'd start singing with me.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed that feeling. And I never thought that I would be doing music full time. This is just me enjoying the process of coming out of my shell.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated college, I went to the UK and I wanted to connect with my family over there. And I started going to open mics. I went to I remember I went to Soho as a Spice of Life cafe, and I did an open mic over there. I went to Denmark Street. I met a producer over there. We started recording. My first EP called When Love's Not Around, that's up on my Spotify. It's like 10 years old because I've been doing music for so long. Well, over 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's like, what, 2010, 2011?
Yeah.
I still have that up online, and I should probably take it down. My voice is completely transformed.
No, why would you take it down? Van Halen still have their first album from 1978. So if they're not taking that down, why would you take yours down?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I think a lot of artists, they like to show their best work. And, you know, there's like, I'm trying to think, not Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran. I mean, they have some of their old stuff up already.
Neil Young comes to mind. Neil Young, whenever you go and see Neil Young, you never know. I've never gone to see Neil Young myself, but from what I hear is that you never hear any old stuff that Neil Young's done. It's only the current stuff that he's doing.
Yeah.
So there you go. Maybe that's what you're trying to find, is it?
Yeah, I think artists like to be in control of their image. They like to show people who they are at this moment, and they like to change. We have the ability to change. That's what makes the music, in my opinion. I think it makes the music interesting as it evolves over time.
I really
got into music when I was traveling, and I came back to LA after that experience in the UK, and I thought, I really want to go for this, but I wasn't sure. I thought, do I want to be a full-time teacher? I had gotten my psychology degree and I was doing some tutoring, and I got offered to get my credential. And I had a moment of like, if I don't do this now, if I don't do my music now, I'm really going to regret it. I'm going to be like 30 and then be like, I haven't gone after my dreams. So I made this decision. I said to myself, okay, I'm going to busk on the Santa Monica Promenade. That's where everybody street performs. Most people who come to LA, they start out over there. You get a permit. And I remember watching some performers one day. This was like in 2012. I remember watching them and thinking, hey, I could do that. And so I got my permit in 2013 or 2014. And I remember within an hour, I had made $100, which was a lot of money at the time. And it was more money than I had ever made playing a show at like House of Blues or some of these like really popular venues in LA. They get their reputation from these big artists, you know, in the 70s, like you're saying James Taylor and you know, some of the big artists that had played there, they always use that as a way to book acts. And the issue I had with playing those venues, as prestigious as they were, as an amazing opportunity as it was to play at those venues, the promoters, they would basically put an artist like myself, I'm an acoustic, you know, folk pop singer songwriter. They put me next to a metal band.
I love it. Yeah. Well, you need to make that play to your advantage. So you need to get in touch with the metal band beforehand and be like, right, I'm going to play one of your songs acoustic and use half the metal up like Taylor Swift. Have you seen all those like lately on TikTok? I've seen like AI generated, like James Hetfield from Metallica singing Love Story was one of them by Taylor Swift. And I think
I haven't seen that, but I think I would find it
amazing.
Funny.
It's amazing. And there's another trend of Homer Simpson singing like Irish traditional songs. It's hilarious. It's so spot on. It's absolutely so spot on. So it's, for me, it's proven the concept. So the next time you're playing a House of Blues and you've got Megadeth next to you, get onto them beforehand and be like, right, this is my song. Here's the cards.
That's a brilliant idea.
I think I'd fucking pay to see that. No bother at all. That's great. That'd be great.
Oh,
all together.
Gosh.
That all sounds absolutely fantastic, and I love interviewing people that are from America and live over in Los Angeles, because you, and I mean this in the nicest way, you name drop places like House of Blues like it's like your local pub, whereas I grew up knowing exactly what House of Blues was and think it's this whole mystical, magical, amazing, like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory of like gig venues. Do you know what I mean? It's mental. And I love that. So let's go back just a little bit. So you said that you started off playing when you were quite young because your ma had inspired you. She was from London, was she?
Yes.
London, grand job. I got that. So anyone that wasn't clued into, Soho is in London, as is also Denmark Street, which is the most amazing place in the whole world for musicians. It's class. Anytime I'm down in London, straight to Denmark Street. It's class. Yes. But so those first... first couple of years learning guitar, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so I actually started quite late, in my opinion. I started when I was like 15, and I know a lot
Oh, that is late.
Yeah, a lot of people start when they're 4, 5, 6 years old. I didn't start till I was a teenager.
Well, I was 13. I was 13 myself. I didn't get my first guitar until I was 13. I'm a guitar teacher myself. Well, a music teacher. I teach a load of different instruments. But the vast majority of my students are started within the 8 to 11 bracket. So I would have said that was quite late. And but look, it's obviously not held you back at all. And did you go for lessons or did you teach yourself? Or
it was a mix of both. So I taught myself. And in college, I took a course. But for the most part, I learned by playing with other people. I would ask other musicians questions. Hey, what's this chord? How do you play this?
Yeah, 100%. It's that whole, it's a concept that I came across, or I was introduced to very recently. It's the whole, it's called the learning pyramid or something along those lines, where it's like you retain the information so much more by teaching others and actually yes. reaching out to find that information yourself. It seems that you and I were in that kind of just coming up to that generation where it was possible to learn anything really on YouTube. I was exactly the same. I taught myself how to play by watching YouTube and asking my mates. The turning point for me was when I asked my mate how to read tabs, and I was like, oh, that's stupidly easy. And once I got that, I was like, I was away. There was no stopping me.
Yes.
No, that's really good. So you were playing away, and then you joined a choir, and you had your huge moment singing "Bridge Over Troubled Water," which is an undertaking for anybody. Never mind someone in their teens. So fair play to you. That's amazing. And you went to do psychology. Is that what you said?
Yes, I studied psychology.
Right. Now, that is a bit of a turning point. That is a little. Well, it's not even a bit of a turning point. That's a bit of a nowhere near music. At all. Yep. So you'd mentioned that you kind of came to a crossroads. You were like, right, am I going to be a psychologist or am I going to be a musicist? What was the actual catalyst? What was the final straw that you were like, no, I'm going for this?
I think it was seeing other people play and seeing that we're out there, putting themselves out there. And I was inspired by their courage. And I was also at a point where I felt like, you know, I had just gotten back from traveling, and I was learning more about who I was. Mm. And I didn't want to be someone who just did as they were told, did things because they wanted to play it safe. I wanted to take a risk. Mm. And I thought, well, I'm, you know, 24, 25 at the time. I thought now's the time to take that risk. If I mess up, you know, I could always change careers later.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's something I like talking about on the podcast, is that we don't choose to be musicians. I really don't think we do. It's like people in Ireland. I'm from Ireland, just in case you didn't catch the accent, but some people don't, and it baffles me. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But people in Ireland, when people talk about a vocation, they speak about like priests for one, that it's, you don't wake up one morning and just decide I'm going to join the priesthood. You have they call it a calling. I think yes. being a musician, being any sort of a creative person is exactly the same. I don't think I ever had a choice. I tried hard for years to have a real job and be a grown up and go to work, do what I was told. I just can't do it. I just don't have it in me to just do what I'm told just for the sake of being told to do it. And I think so many others are like that. And I really feel for people that are still at that point where they haven't kind of made the jump and take the risk. Did you have?
I can really relate to that. What you're saying. I mean, not, you know, feeling like you can do the 9-to-5 thing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us. I don't know if it's having a strong character or. I don't know what it is, but some people do better when they are leaders in their own lives.
Yeah. Oh, no, 100%. Yeah. I don't know if I lost my business in the morning, I don't know if I would be able to go back to working in a job where I had to do what I was told. And it's not that I just don't want to do it. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm probably making myself out to be a bit of a dick, but I'm really not. It's just, it is just that whole creative mind that I'm like, why? I could be doing something. Do you know, it's, anyway. So yeah. Like for maybe those people out there that are listening that are still in that struggle of 9 to 5, having to do what they're told, not really enjoying themselves, really wanting to make the leap of faith that you and I both made. Did you have any plan of what you were going to do? Or were you just like, fuck it, I'm going to play guitar and I'm going to do my best. And as the challenges come up, I'll face them. Or did you have like an actual game plan?
That is a great question. I would say to people, if they are thinking about doing music full time, have a plan. You should have a plan.
Yeah,
I did not have a plan, and so I can speak for somebody who learned a lot from making mistakes by not having a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned so much about business and being an entrepreneur, and you know, I think a lot of musicians they're in survival mode because they're so concerned with making money. And you reach a point in your career where you actually are thriving and doing a lot better when you plan out your set, for example. You're not, like for me, I was just busking because I wanted to make a certain amount every day. And I didn't think too much about my show. But when I started thinking about my live show, I would start building an audience and start getting people to come out. And this is something that I'm still working on. I'm by no means like an expert at you know, doing this, but the more you practice planning out how you're going to spend your money, for example, what equipment you're going to buy, what gigs you're going to take, the more successful you're going to be in the long run. And I had to learn this the hard way. You know, when I first started, I would accept any gig that would come at me.
Mm-hmm.
People would see me playing on the street and they'd be like, hey, do you want to come play at my venue? And the pay was just, excuse my language, absolute shit. But
don't worry about language on this podcast. You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Absolute shite. Yes. I would accept those gigs because I thought, well, I just want to play out anywhere mm-hmm. and everywhere. And in the long run, it doesn't serve you as a musician to do that. You really have to know your worth. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it was a good experience for me. You know, I always tell people there's three things that you have to take in consideration when you take a gig. Is it enjoyable? How well does it pay? And will it lead to other opportunities? And sometimes you are offered a gig and it pays really well, but it doesn't lead to other opportunities.
Yeah.
And maybe it's somewhat enjoyable, but you have to have at least like two out of the three in the choice. So, you know, you might have an unpaid gig, maybe it's a songwriter hang and the company is just amazing. And then you're meeting other people from that songwriter hang or that songwriter night. And it leads to more connections with people who could then maybe you want to co-write with them. Maybe you want to jam with them. I mean, it's not paid, but there's definitely something that you can take away from that particular gig. So that it's so much more complicated than just, does it pay well?
Yeah, no, totally.
So yeah, I think it's good to have a plan, and don't quit your day job until you have enough money saved up to actually quit it. I know a lot of people are told by music industry professionals, well, you just have to sacrifice everything for music and live and breathe music. I mean, that's not healthy either.
No,
you need to have a social life. You need to have friends around you. Support is so important.
Yeah.
Because you can't do this alone. You need to have people around you who are there in times of when it gets tough.
Yeah.
And who can, or people that you can trust, because there's a lot of people who like to tell you who you are, and only you know who you are.
Yeah.
And it's good to have people around you who recognize that, who recognize your strengths, because it's very easy for other people to tear you down in the long run.
Yeah.
The entertainment business is one, in my opinion, it's one of the hardest businesses to to be in. It's brutal.
Yeah,
it's brutal because you get your shot on the stage. If you embarrass yourself, then, oh man, all those eyes on you. It's so, I don't know what the word is, but
terrifying.
It doesn't feel good.
It's
terrifying. Not. There you go.
I used to live in Spain, right? When I was 19, I moved to Spain and I played in Irish pubs in one particular town in Spain, in Salou, right? And my very first night that, now before I went, right, I had never sang for a band. I didn't know any Irish songs. I just was playing with my band in my local home in Ireland one night, and a girl from the same town as me used to work over in one of the pubs and says, oh, you're very good, you go over. So I went over with a totally different guy, and I know, as I said, I'd never sang for a band. I didn't know any Irish songs. I'd never lived away from home. I'd never had a job other than playing music. Wow. Blah blah blah. And my very first night, I was meant to play, myself and my bandmate, we were meant to play for 3 hours, and we got 2.5 songs in. And we were told to stop.
Oh my God.
2.5 songs. And I spent the next 2 weeks dipping my toes into the pool in the, sitting at the edge of the pool with a songbook and a guitar, learning every Irish song I possibly could. And it was literally, I'd literally given myself one more day, and I managed to turn it around on like the last day. Just
That's
about.
Good.
Like, thanks be to God it turned out, because it was terrifying. And I will... I will never ever forget that, and it was shit. But the best way
I think that it's very courageous that you went over there and you took the risk in the first, like, the intention behind all of that, the fact that you just went over there and just tried it, and you're like, okay, I messed up, but now I know what I need to do to get better. Yeah. I think that's something to celebrate as well, because some people don't even try. They just I'm too scared.
Yeah.
But the fact that you did it and you're like, you know what? I messed up, but I'm going to make it better. That shows a lot about who you are.
And full sure that night, I was like, oh, great. 2.5 songs. Savage. I'm finished. I can go drinking now. So, like, silver lining and all that.
Yeah. But, the way you handled that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I don't, looking back now, it seems very wise and sage and mature, but it really, really wasn't at the time. I can tell you that now for nothing. It really, really was not wise or sage or any sort of good vibes at all. It was just pure stupidity on my end. As a 19-year-old thinking I could move away from home and live the life of a rock star by just walking into a pub and being like, hello, here I am. I'm class. Do you know what I mean? But hey-ho. It worked out in the end. It worked out in the end. So it's all good. It's all good. But I suppose it does just go to show that, like, look, nobody died. Not like I got my second chance because I found out a very hard way what not to do. I never did it again.
Yes.
And here we are 10, 11 years later, and still nobody died. It's all good. Still nobody died. So we're all good. So we're all good. So let's go back to talking about you. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say. So when you made that decision, right? So you didn't have a plan. You were just going to, like, what was day one of Katie Ferrara, music expert? What did that look like, as opposed to Katie Ferrara, psychologist at law? I'm trying to think of a really cool, like, name for, like, your eventual, like, show on Disney Plus.
Well, I thought I was going to go into teaching with the psychology degree, and the thing is, what I want to say to people is that you might study something, you might be at a job, and that job is still applicable. The things that you learn in that job or the things that you study, it's still applicable to whatever field you choose to change your career to or change your direction towards. And I think about this because, so I still substitute teach from time to time. And when I substitute teach, I think about my class as an audience, and it's a very great way for me to practice speaking in front of large groups of people. And I have to do this as a performer. I have to introduce myself. I sometimes tell stories between my songs during my set. And so it's a really great way for me to build that confidence and use the same skills that I learn in a teaching environment. I'm still using that when I'm performing in front of a large group of people. I would say, you know, when I made that decision to busk on the Santa Monica Promenade, that was the turning point in my life. That was when I said, okay, I don't know what the plan is just yet. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I know that by me making this decision, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. It just felt right. I feel like when you listen to your body and when you are in alignment with who you are, then you can also learn along the way. So you don't have to have all the plan set in place. I think it's good to have a plan, but I think what's most important is to listen to your intuition. And again, that's where the psychology comes from. You have to be in alignment with who you are. And my body was telling me at the time, oh, go in this direction.
Yeah.
And listen to all the people that come at you. They're giving you messages on what to do. Like, talk to people and learn more about yourself. And once you learn more about yourself, you're able to build that plan.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that was so important to me. Just setting foot out and just committing to something. And I think the commitment is what's so important when you're going after your dream. It's like you might not have the confidence, you might not have the plan just yet, but committing to just showing up every day is so incredibly important when you're following your dreams.
100%. You've put that beautifully, putting like making sure your body is in alignment. That just hit home for me in such a big way. Like I said, for years I worked in jobs that I hated. I was useless at, and it was just I always felt like a musician trapped in a real person's body. Do you know what I mean? It was the weirdest. So that really, really hit home for me. And I hope it's hit home for others as well. Let's talk about some like practical advice and some practical chat. So when you started busking, what did you take with you?
I took a portable amp. At the time, I had the Cube Street. Yes. And but it was a small version. I know they have the larger one.
Oh, like the little square one.
Yeah,
that had a little handle.
Square one. Yeah, had a little handle on it. And I remember I saved up, I think it was like, $60, $70 at the time. I was busking without an amp, and I had saved that money, and I bought the amp using that money. And then I got a microphone, I got a mic stand, I had a little sign, and I had the CDs that I had made for my first EP. I carried some of those, and I had a cart is really important. Everyone comments on my cart. At my gigs, I had the Rock and Roller cart. I don't know if you're familiar with that brand.
Nope.
So a lot of drummers use it. It's like a pull out cart, and it just helps transport materials. Now I use a wagon because the wagon contains everything. When people see me, they're just so shocked. They're like, "You're doing that all by yourself?" I'm like, "Well yeah, this is what I do."
Like a wagon? Like how big is this wagon?
But your system's different. Don't you use the metric system?
I have no idea what wagon converts into in metrics at all. Like when you're saying wagon, I'm thinking like, I don't know. Like imagine a cowboy's bus. Does that make?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an object that's about the same size as all my equipment. I would say a medium-sized cow, or a Labrador dog, like a large, or a large golden retriever.
This is absolutely. Who needs metrics? Who needs metrics or imperial? How big is that? Roughly the size of a small cow / big Labrador. Do you know what I mean? Barry, how much did you have to drink last night? Maybe 4 or 5 terriers worth, and a cat for good measure. Like, it's phenomenal.
Roughly the size. I'm trying to think.
I tell you what. I'm good with gear. I'm good with gear and name.
Yeah.
So hit me with what you take nowadays, and I can try and relate that back to how big your wagon is. It doesn't sound like a wagon what I'm... I don't know if I've ever said the word wagon as much in my life.
You think of a farmer, like, and they have this like horse-drawn wagon.
And that's it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So, like, I tell you, fair play to you if you've got one of those. Like, do you know what I mean? Like a rickshaw kind of job.
I think I'm gonna need one of those eventually. I've accumulated so much equipment over the years. So I started with that small Cube Street amp, and then I got endorsed by Mackie, and I was given the free play.
Yeah.
So I was using that for a few years. And then I got endorsed by QSC. And QSC is by far my favorite company that I've ever worked with. They have given me the K8.2 speakers. And by the way, all these companies are really great. But For what I do now, for most of my events, I play a lot of private events. I play in, you know, loud bars and clubs, and even for busking, it's great. These speakers, the K8.2s, if you go up to the 12s, they cut through really well. The sound cuts through. And I've noticed that, well, with other speaker systems, like the other system I have is a Fishman SA330.
Oh, I know. It's a big tin one.
Yes. The fish stick.
I know.
That's what I call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a while I was using that, for like my winery gigs, and it's really great. Super portable, easy to set up, easy for like the solo acoustic musician. But I just found that the QSC speakers and the Touch Mix, they really cut through in environments. They really bring out the color and vocals. They're great for DJs. They're great for singers. And then I add my own effects. Like I've got my own reverb pedal that I like to use. I have an Oceans 11 by Electro Harmonix. I love using that pedal for the guitar. I use for my vocals and for looping, if I want to loop percussion or add any vocal effects, I have the TC Electronic Play Acoustic.
I had one of those for years. They're great.
Yeah, it's great. And it, you know, sometimes I get lazy at my gigs. I'm like, I don't want to set up the Touch Mix. I use the Play Acoustic as a mixer, so I can just directly in with the speakers. And people always comment. They always say, your voice sounds amazing. I love it because I don't have to do anything. I don't have to tweak the EQ. I don't have to add compression. It's just, everything is just there. It's set in stone.
I believe they call it adaptive compression, adaptive EQ, adaptive something or
adaptive.
Other. There you go. Whatever it is. That's that's class. And you take the QSC stuff out busking.
Yes.
That is fucking sad. Like I had a quick Google, so I knew what it was, because I'm very aware of QSC and they are excellent, really, really top quality stuff. And the fact that you're out, like, that's far fancier than anything myself and my bandmate use for gigs in like pubs or weddings or anything that we do. Like,
for busking, I power those speakers. I have a Jackery battery, it's 500 watts, and it'll power two QSC speakers and my Touch Mix, and it'll last me about 3 or 4 hours. And I love this battery. So if you're a musician and you want to be able to play anywhere, invest in camping gear. Camping gear is your best friend. Solar panels, batteries. Because if you play outdoors all the time, you're going to be. I mean, you're in Ireland. It rains over there. The weather is horrendous.
Yeah.
Shite. There you go.
Yeah.
It can be shite. I'm lucky because, you know, I go outside, I'm like, oh, it's a sunny day, people are going to tip me. In LA, if it starts raining, automatically, no one comes out to your shows, nobody wants to tip you. At least in other parts of the world, people don't care about the weather much. They're like, I just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
But in LA, if the weather's bad, it's just dead silence. You won't have anyone show up. It's really hard to get people to come out when the weather's bad.
So but how often does it rain, though?
This year, it's actually rained a lot. It's been rain from January until about June. It's just cloudy, cold, especially at the beach. It wasn't until about like July, August that people really started coming out. And, you know, we have all the summer festivals as well.
Yeah.
But it definitely makes an impact here in LA. People are just chicken. They're scared of clouds.
Oh, well, listen, what do you call someone from LA?
I don't know.
I don't know. Someone from Ireland is Irish. Someone from LA is
a Los Angelian.
A Los Angelian.
Yes.
Right. All you Los Angelians, would you ever fucking not be such cowards? Up you get to Jesus. Get up them steps. Out you get. It's only a bit of rain. It'll wash off you. It's fine.
And people have to get into their cars too. Nobody wants to drive to the west side. I know it sounds ridiculous.
Why? What's on the west side? Rain.
The rain and the beach and traffic, because the traffic is so bad in LA that nobody wants to get in their cars and go across town.
Use Americans love traffic. Anytime I have been in America, it's nothing but traffic. You might as well, you don't even need, what do you call it? Like a sidewalk. You don't even need a sidewalk because the traffic doesn't fucking move anyway. You just, stop. I was in New York in about 6 or 7, well, maybe about 8 years ago. And my God, the worst drivers I've ever come across, New Yorkers fucking sort your lives out. I'm telling you now. Oh, the worst traffic I've ever seen in my life. And people don't wait for traffic lights. People will happily sit like in like at a junction. New Yorkers will happily sit in the middle so that this one can't go just so they can get through the. Oh my God! Sort your lives out, New York and Los Angeles, and everybody.
Every city is different. Yeah.
There we go.
Oh my goodness.
I hope I don't get cancelled now for that. I've just had a go at absolutely everybody in America. But anyway, not intentionally. I love y'all. I do. I love y'all. You just can't drive.
It's okay. You can make fun of us. It's fine.
I'm sure I get some slagging on all of that as well. So it's all good. So anyway, off on a complete and utter tangent. Yes. So camping gear. So that battery then, if it's able to power two powered speakers, yeah?
Yes.
Two powered speakers. That touch mix can't be light on electricity because that is high tech. You've got a couple of pedals. Yes. You've got a couple of bits and bobs.
Yes. It powers all of it.
How big is it?
How big is what? The battery?
The battery, yeah. It must be huge, is it?
No, it's like the size of my speaker, I would say. I don't know if you could. I'm trying to give you an example.
I was really waiting to hear how many turtles big it was or something like that.
You see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that it?
That's my studio.
Sorry. Oh, that's your studio monitor. Yeah, so it's that.
Yeah, it's not too big. It's about the size of a studio monitor.
Okay, grand. Well, yeah, for anybody listening that doesn't know how big a studio monitor is, it's about that size.
Yes.
About that size. So for anybody listening, yes. That's how big it is. Yeah. Anyway. That's really, really good. And then you managed to get all that on like, okay, so I'm kind of, so we would call that like a trolley or a little trailer. Maybe not a wagon, but yeah, I kind of get
you now. A trolley. That's what it is. That's the difference between our use of English.
There you go. Trolley. That's all good. I think wagon's a better word for it. I think wagon is a far better word. It's more fun to say. It's got a W in it. Do you know what I mean? There's a song named after it. There's also a biscuit in Ireland called a wagon wheel, which is a phenomenal little thing. So it's all good.
What? That's so cool.
Yeah, it's like a chocolate marshmallow type biscuit thing. It's class. And you get some of them and have jam in them and they're unbelievable. Absolutely.
Well, I'd love to try that next time in Ireland. I'll definitely.
Yeah, you can get them in. You can get them in Scotland, the rest of the UK as well, I think. So whenever the next time you're over this end of the world, look for a wagon wheel.
Cool.
There you go. It's not named after the song, and I don't. Anyway, the less the less said about that song, the better. But anyway, so you touched on a really interesting point there that I was actually speaking about to someone about on a podcast not too long ago, very recently. That when you do make the decision to become a musician, you kind of. The lines are so blurred between like what does a standard day look like for a professional musician. You're guaranteed, like most people looking on the outside looking in would think, oh, you just wake up, you play guitar, you maybe put some new strings on, you go out and you just be a rock star. But it actually isn't in any way, shape or form. I would say maybe 20-30% of our day is actually playing music and the other 70 is like panicking and sweating and like just trying not to die. With anxiety and actually learning how to like do all the other stuff like the content creation, the admin, the bookkeeping, how did you find that? And was it a process of elimination? Did you make some mistakes and realize, fuck, I better learn how to do some bookkeeping, or like what happened?
Well, again, that's where the plan comes in. I came into this just knowing I enjoy doing music. I love singing. I love playing guitar. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And the first thing I did, actually, so I wanted to show up every day. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show up busking every day. So I marked out those days on my calendar to perform. And then as I was performing, I would get approached by venues and they would want to book me. And then I would then have to figure out, oh, shoot, I need to figure out how to negotiate these gigs. Mm. I also need to have a performer agreement. Intact because when you're an artist you want to get paid on time,
mm-hmm.
and you want to get paid a fair rate,
mm-hmm.
and you also need to give the venue your requirements for performing. A lot of the time we'll just accept gigs and then the venue will then dictate to you what you should be doing, but you're an independent contractor. I don't know if you have the same thing over there, but
to an extent
yes, you're an independent contractor, so you need to have your agreements and everything lined out before you book the gig. And this could be sent in an email, this could be written up, but it has to be very clear what the expectations are for mm-hmm. that gig. I'm playing for 3 hours or 2 hours, This is going to be the rate. This is the equipment I'm bringing. The venue needs to provide power. The venue needs to provide a meal. There needs to be parking. What else? Do I need business insurance? That's another thing. If you're playing like a private event, or even if you're playing in a like a fancy hotel, a lot of them require you to get business insurance. And so, you know, the more I was getting these gigs, the more I would integrate that into my planning, and integrate that into you know, becoming a full-time artist. What else? Having a calendar set in place, having a booking email is important. Mm-hmm. These are all things I started to get as I would get offered gigs. Knowing how to give yourself time when somebody asks you to play. Like, a lot of the time I get people coming up to me during a gig and they say, "What's your rate?" And I hate that question.
I can't call for it, yeah.
I get put on the spot, and the thing is, you need to collect as much information as possible before giving them a rate. And I just say, thank you so much for your inquiry. I don't talk about rates at my gigs, but you can email me at katie@katieferrara.com. And from there, I can then get the information that I need from them to make an informed decision about whether or not this is a good fit. What, you know, and I like to get to know people too. Yeah. I like to get to know, like, is it a birthday? Is it a holiday that you're celebrating? How can we make this event the best event possible?
Yeah.
It's so important to have those communication skills. And that's something that I've had to learn over the years, how to do by making all those mistakes. Because I've said that again. Oh, well, my rate is blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I could have asked for more money.
Yeah. And then you always get the inevitable, "Yeah, but like, give us a ballpark," or
Yeah.
"Oh, grand. Yeah, I'll email you. But how much is it?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, so I'll if you let me know what the crack is." "Oh yeah, well, like, how much are you for a gig?" And you're like, "Can you just fuck off now, please?" I can't.
That's where knowing your worth comes in. And I would 100%. Say, if you are an artist, write down, what is it that I am offering these people? Mm. And I always put in my emails, I always put, I'm providing a 2-speaker sound system. I'm providing lighting. I'm providing a playlist of break music. I am providing a curated playlist of songs off of my song list. So then when you name your price, they know exactly what they're getting, and mm-hmm. you value yourself so much because you pointed out everything that you are offering to them. And now that gives you negotiation room with that other person, and they understand more about what you do. Like what you're saying, most people just think, "Oh, musician just wakes up and they're in their pajamas and they're jamming and then they just show up to the gig." No, I don't do that. Wake up in the morning. I have my emails that I need to attend to. I try and get back to people as soon as I can. I'm booking gigs. If I've done a gig the night before, I'm putting in that info into ASCAP. ASCAP is, I don't know if you have the equivalent over there, PRS maybe. It's a Performing Rights Society.
Oh, yeah.
So when you do a live show, you want to input the songs that you've done because you get paid for that. So
what?
You get paid for live performances. If you write your own original music, you need to be submitting those songs that you played at that gig. You need to be submitting that to your performing rights organization, because that is income that is owed to you. Nobody says this to musicians, by the way. We just do the gigs and
you're missing
out on money.
I know what snippet of this podcast is going on TikTok. That's unbelievable. I never knew that.
Yes. So anytime you perform a gig, always submit your songs to your Performing Rights Society, because every time you create a song, it's like an asset in some ways. You're investing in yourself, and this is why I would say, write as many songs as you can. Continue writing. If you are interested in songwriting, build that catalog, because the more of your catalog you have, it becomes an asset. You can actually sell that the more songs you write, you can market that to record labels. You can market that to other artists. People, again, it's seeing your worth. And I would say to people, as you are going through your music career, write down everything that you do. Give yourself credit for everything that you do, because in the long run, you might not be able to see it, but it all adds up. And I have to remind myself this every day. I'm like, oh, I don't feel successful. When I feel like that, I'm like, yeah, but what did I do today? What's on my checklist? What did I get accomplished today? Because other people are not going to see that. You have to see that. You have to reward yourself. You have to tell yourself, I did all of these things.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists don't have that set in place. They cannot see the work that they're putting in, but literally showing up to the page again, making that commitment and pinpointing, okay, these are my values, and knowing your value, what is important to you as a brand. What do you want to represent as a brand? For me, I can tell you, I really value authenticity. I value clear communication. I value being inspiring. And I try and embody that as an artist, as a brand. I try and do that in my social media posts. I try and do that as I'm speaking to people. I think that's so important. Again, that's part of your business plan as an artist. And if you're running a company, for example, you need to have your mission statement. You need to have that set in place. But I think it's okay if you don't know these things when you're starting. It's okay. You'll reach a point where if you want to get to the next level,
yeah,
then that's the work that you need to do.
Yeah. And often, if anyone out there, that's a very good point, is that if anyone out there is listening and thinking, oh God, this is a huge, big, long list of things that I have to do. Rome wasn't built in a day, for starters. And oftentimes, you won't know that you need these things until something happens that you realize, oh, that's going to be a handy thing to have. And just like me with my 2.5 songs, nobody died. No one's going to die. Nothing bad's going to happen. This, an opportunity is just going to present itself, and you're going to be like, oh, I probably should look into some sort of business insurance or public liability insurance, as it's called over here, for doing gigs. I should probably look into getting my electrical equipment tested on a yearly basis to make sure that it's compliant for any of these venues. And things like that, you don't need to go and it's all well and good to have a plan. But a plan is perfect. Adequate is perfect. As you were saying, taking that leap of faith and actually going, adequate is perfect. All these extra things that will eventually become your business backbones, call it business backbones, call it whatever you want, the musical equivalent of it, whether you're a musician or whether you're a builder, you're still going to have these same, roughly the same business backbones, and they will present themselves in a timely manner, a perfectly okay manner.
Yes, and I would add, I think the best thing to do is to go in with the mentality of learning and growing and seeing every gig as an opportunity to improve. So at the end of the gig, what worked, what didn't. Like last night, for example, I played a private event in Ojai, and I set up my QSC speakers, and I did not have a cable that was long enough to plug the speakers into my power strip, and the lighting lady, she let me borrow her extra cables, and I wrote down, go on Amazon and purchase some extension cords.
Yeah,
because you never know at a gig what you're going to need. And if she didn't have those cables, I could have been fucked. Excuse my language. So I learned a lot from her. I learned what worked in that situation and what didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, on a total side note, myself and my bandmate, we've got powered speakers as well. We've got Mackies, and we've got combined XLR and power cables, so that it's literally one big, long, thick cable that goes for the signal and for the power. So you could look into those. They weren't really that expensive at all. But very, very good point. Very, very well made, 100%. That's great stuff altogether. Yeah. Let's speak about your music. You've just released a single a couple of weeks ago called Raspberries.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
Yes. So this song, it's actually a song I wrote a while ago. It's been in my catalog, and I'm in the process of releasing all those songs that I've recorded. I'm also recording an album. I'll have some more news about that in the next few months. But I just reached a point, you know, I was doing all these, you know, corporate private gigs, I was busking, restaurant gigs, and I wasn't putting out my own music. And I think a lot of musicians have gotten to that point. They're like, okay, I want to do the full-time thing. But original music is important to me. So I've gotten back on that train. And Raspberries is really, it's a sweet song. It's a bittersweet song about the comforts of food, and about Well, I don't want to say too much about what it is about. I want people to listen to the song, actually.
they can go and make up their own own way about it. Yeah.
You can make up your own meaning. I will say that if you like cooking, if you love fruit, if you love raspberries, and you love the comforts of home, you'll enjoy this song called Raspberries. And it was produced by my friend Ted Wolfers. He's an amazing songwriter and producer. He lives just outside Ojai in Camarillo. And he played, the lap steel. I played banjo on the song. I played some harmonica.
Class.
He played some, brushes, on, the drums, snare drum. We got bells in there, and, we made it at his old studio. It was, at the time he was living in Sherman Oaks, and we made it in that studio. It was just so fun. It was like being a kid again. You know, when you're a kid, you're playing with all your toys. It's the same thing being in the studio. You're like, oh, let's try this.
Loads of fun.
The whole experience was fun. Yes. So please listen to that song. I think you'll enjoy it. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Music. It's on YouTube. It is on my Bandcamp. Yes. And I have another single as well I wanted to promote. So I have a cover of Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. And that song, I'm really proud of it because I never sing songs in that genre. And I think it really shows off my voice. I'm so used to singing like really sweet, like folky songs.
Yeah.
That song was vocally intensive for me and I'm very proud of it. And I think you'll like it. You'll like the energy behind it. If you're having a bad day and you just need something to lift you up, listen to my take on that cover. I think it'll lift your spirits.
Definitely will.
That's what we all need. Yeah.
Well, both of those will be linked in the description in some sort of fashion from somewhere.
I also wanted to give a shout out to Fernando Perdomo. Fernando Perdomo produced that cover of Don't Stop Me Now. He played the electric sitar on that song. I didn't even know that. Yeah, the sitar could be electric. He played the solo on electric sitar, and I thought that was so interesting.
That's phenomenal.
And then, yeah, he's a multi-instrumentalist. He's very influenced by like Beatles and a lot of those classic rock bands, and that's why I chose to work with him on that cover, because he's just an amazing guitarist as well, amazing songwriter and producer. And check out his music, Fernando Perdomo.
How are you, Fernando? What's the crack? That sounds class. Electric sitar. This is the second time I'm going to mention Van Halen on this episode, is that in the solo of Ain't Talking About Love, there was an electric sitar buried way, way deep in the mix. There you go.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Nobody knows that. Nobody in the world knows that. Nobody needs to know that.
But where did you find out that information?
I am just the biggest Van Halen fan in the world. And literally, I show this, like, that's my phone, but that's the pattern of Eddie Van Halen's guitar. That's Eddie Van Halen there in a little Funko. Like, everything I have is like that's Eddie Van Halen there in the corner looking over me. So yeah, I literally am that nerdy. But there you go, electric sitar, baby. I love it. Love it. That's so cool. One of the things that you mentioned you like to talk about, some good habits for musicians. Top three best habits for musicians of any kind.
Practice every single day.
Yeah.
Or at least set aside time during your week. If it's not every day, just set aside a committed time to show up and practice your instrument. Because as much as we would like to say, oh, I don't need to practice, there's going to be times during gigs. You do, because you're going to mess up during your gigs and you're going to need to improvise. And if that muscle memory is in there, it's like the mistake didn't even happen because you practiced.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all guilty of it. Everyone knows who you are. Go out there, put it down and go and put whatever you're doing down and go and pick up your guitar or your drumsticks or your bow, whatever it is.
Yes. Another habit is to practice self-care, because when you show up to a gig, people are picking up on your energy. That's what music is. It's this transfer of emotional energy. You're giving that to people, and so you really want to come in just in a good mood. I know it sounds like you know, simple, but make sure that you're self-caring, because it can be a very exhausting industry to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to deal with difficult people. You're going to be dealing with playing late at night. Get enough sleep, eat well, try and stay away from alcohol. I sound like a mom right now, but
no. These are all things that I need to hear as well. So it's all good.
You know, make sure you have enough to eat during your gig, and that you're just self-caring. That's a good habit to have.
Yeah.
And I've always told myself, you know, if I don't have time to practice, at least, you know, I'll try and practice my self-care habits, because I want to show up to the gig in a good mood.
Yeah.
And then the third habit, I would say is to, I don't know if this is a habit, but be open to growing. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody is perfect. Practice asking questions and being curious and learning new things, because the industry is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have TikTok, for example. We've got live streaming. Get in the habit of researching new technological updates. Get in the habit of just being curious and being trying to be better at what you do.
Just be aware that, like, the world doesn't end after the G card. Like, do you know what I mean? That's my favorite one, because I am such a big advocate. As you can probably see, I've got a load of instruments on the wall. Now, I'm a guitar player, but I can play mandolin, bang. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That came from pure and utter curiosity, because I was like, well, it just looks like a small guitar. Surely it can't be that hard. And without meaning to sound cocky or anything, it's not that hard. It's the same principles can be applied. Be curious. In my band that I'm in, I play mandolin. I don't play guitar in the band. Well, I do from time to time, but 9 times out of 10, I play mandolin, and I'm a guitar player. Do you know what I mean? So I if I wasn't curious, then I might not have gotten that job. Do you know what I mean? That job might have been available to me. So I love that one. I'm such a big believer in that we shouldn't just say, right, I've learned guitar. Grand. Lovely. That's me. I'm done. Practice being curious. I love that. You've put that beautifully. That psychology stuff. You know what I mean? That's the, you have a good way with words. You're like a walking chat GPT. It's great.
Thank you.
So, Kay, before we start finishing up, what is next for you? Obviously, you said you were kind of teasing a bit of an album there, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But what's next for you?
What's next is more singles, more releasing new original music, and the album. I don't want to say too much about it, but I know that it's going to be a big surprise for people. It's going to be, I think it's some of my best work that I've been working on this year, and I'm just so excited to get that wrapped up this year and share when it'll be out.
Good stuff. Well, I look forward to hearing it. Before we finish up, we're going to jump into a quickfire round. Quickfire round, as I always say, it's just a bit of fun at the end. So we were talking there about the difference between trolley and wagon, and it being meaning the same thing, right? Do you have any colloquialisms? I tried to spell that, and I got as far as C-O-L-O, and that was it. Couldn't get any further. Do you have any colloquialisms that if you go somewhere else in the country or somewhere else in the world, like wagon, that people have absolutely no idea what you're on about?
That's baller. Have you heard that before?
Baller.
That's baller.
That's
like
baller.
That's fire. Yeah. Like you have balls. Like.
Oh, baller. Right.
That's baller.
Right.
That's courageous. That's something that I can't believe that you did that. That's baller. That's you have so much courage to go out there and do that thing. That's baller. Wow.
Okay. I've heard of someone being a baller, as in like they're up for it. I've never heard it in a okay. Ooh, I love that. Ooh, that's baller. I love it.
Maybe that's a California thing. I don't know.
Maybe it is a California thing. I've never been to California, so I wouldn't know. But yeah, very good. I love it. Good stuff. Right. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Oh man. Well, for the last few months I've had insomnia, so I would say that I've been a night owl. I'm trying to be a morning person because I feel that I get more done in the morning. So I'm a night person that's transitioning to being a morning person.
You're a night owl stuck in a morning person's body, or the other way around.
There we go. There we go.
Love it. What's your favorite book of all time?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. I have to think about this for a second. I mean, novel, self-help. I love self-help books.
Makes you happiest, Kay.
Happiest. I like the book Women Who Run with the Wolves. It's a book. It breaks down fairy tales. And I like that again, it's psychological. It breaks down the true meaning of fairy tales.
Oh, there's a podcast in that somewhere.
Ooh.
There's definitely a podcast or at least TikToks or something.
Yeah. Maybe we start it. Or maybe there's a TikTok podcast. I don't know. We'll have to look it up because I'm very interested in that.
What's it called? Women Run with Wolves.
Yeah, Women That Run With Wolves.
So like it takes like Cinderella and tells you that, I don't know, whatever.
Tells the real meaning, behind the symbolism in that story. Same as Sleeping Beauty. There's one about this Bluebeard. Have you ever heard the story of Bluebeard?
Like a pirate.
He's not a pirate. It's folklore. It's all of these are folk stories. Some of them might be Celtic. Some of them might be like European folk stories. But this guy, this woman, she is told by society to trust this guy with a blue beard, and it's really strange that he has a blue beard, but he acts like he's this trustworthy person. She goes to his house and he says to her, like, you can go anywhere in the house, but don't open the door in the basement. That's off limits. And then he goes on a business trip and she's like, well, why did he say that to me? And she gets really curious. And so she finds this key to the door and she opens it and there's dead bodies in there. And she's like, oh, shit.
This is taking a turn.
Then the key starts bleeding and she tries to close the door and the blood gets on her dress and she tries getting the blood off her dress and the key keeps bleeding. And so she's trying to hide the evidence and she realizes, oh, this guy's a psychopath. This guy, basically he takes on wives and then he kills them and he puts them in this you're in your eyes right now.
I'm really struggling to think of what fairy tale this is.
Yeah, fairy tales are.
Well, Brothers Grimm,
so fairy tales are like this, you know, like Little Mermaid, for example.
Yeah.
And the Little Mermaid, she kills herself at the end. She doesn't get the prince, but Disney has completely changed it because kids can't listen to that. Kids, they changed the story. But anyway.
Yeah. Back to Bluebeard.
But moral behind Bluebeard is that oftentimes as women we don't trust our intuition, and so we convince ourselves by our family or by society that somebody is trustworthy because they exhibit certain qualities, but this man has a blue beard. Nobody can grow blue hair on their face. And she found out all his he murders his wives. That's what he does because he's a psychopath. But she lost faith in her intuition because society and her family was like, oh no, he's a good guy. He's a great guy.
Wow.
So I love the message in that, because most people who read that story would think, oh, this is about a woman not obeying orders from a man. But really, it's a story about a woman not trusting her intuition.
Right.
And I love how the author just broke that down, this. I mean, a lot of folklore is very dark. And I sorry if that was too much.
No, I've never heard that one. It's like terrifying, but I love. Yeah, like fairy tale.
We're approaching Halloween season, I'm really into this.
It's grand, and sure. Ireland invented folklore. So it's grand,
It's
grand. We've got like the Banshee and the Children of Lear, and like fucking I don't know who else. Everyone else, you too. Grand. Before we finish up, where can people find you if they're wanting to listen to your music, if they're wanting to book you, Oh no, hang on. I didn't ask you about the Google Maps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
So I was busking in Burbank. This was like in 2016. And one day I met a painter and he was selling his artwork. His name is George Chaloup. And he really liked my music. And I came out one day to play on the corner of Palm Avenue and San Fernando. Mm-hmm. And he was painting my face on this utility box. And I was like so surprised and shocked. And he told me, he's like, I really love your music. I really want to promote you. and he got permission from the city to paint this mural on his utility box. And then my friend, one of my fans, he said, well, we need to let everybody know about this. So he basically put me on Google Maps. So if people want to, he said, Katie, you're a landmark now. So he entered it into Google Maps. So when people try and find me, they find this image on this utility box. And so I don't go out to bus there that often anymore since I'm playing a lot of gigs, but it's kind of nice. It's a nice memory to have because that corner of the street was like my corner, and now it's a landmark.
Phenomenal.
It's a memory in time.
It is absolute. You've just passed into the realm of absolute legend. So you have. No, that's phenomenal. That's great. I love that. I absolutely love that. I did actually. I went and searched it, and I was like, there you are. I was like, that's class.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, if anybody is looking for you for you to appear for them in real life, or maybe wants to listen to your music, where can they find you?
They can find me at katieferrara.com. That's www.KATIE, F for Frank, ERRARA.com. You can also find me on Spotify, Apple Music, and all the streaming platforms. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Instagram at Katie Ferrara Official. I have a new Twitter account. I have, what else? YouTube. I'm everywhere.
You're absolutely everywhere, so you are. Katie, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure as well, and I hope you have.
That was the Music Career Show. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your friends about the Music Career Show.